And our subject today is timing, which I consider a great mystery. And it's the chapter that we were reading this time in our book, Ready. And as an example of timing, I'll start with mentioning that a year ago, I had the tree company come here and look at my big 80-year-old oak tree outside my window. And he said, I said, has the time come for trimming? And he said, no, you'll wait till May 2022. So today is the day that they are out there trimming. And you might hear some noise from the buzz saws. I think you'll still be able to hear me. Anyway, I thought it was kind of a synchronicity that our topic is timing, and that's exactly what led to having them work on the tree today. So let's begin as we usually do in a kind of contemplative style, and I'm going to do a screen share. And Meg, would you unmute? And what you'll be reading is from the book, from the chapter we have today. Meg, can you see this?
Yes.
Okay, so would you read slowly?
Yes. Jesus and his mother Mary attended a festive wedding reception in Cana, a town in Galilee, northern Israel. Mary noticed that the bride and groom had run out of wine. She felt compassion for their embarrassment. She immediately told Jesus of their predicament, knowing he could miraculously solve the problem. We notice that Mary did not wait for the right time to go to Jesus. She made that present moment the right time. Can that sometimes be an option for us, for the people around us? Jesus responded that the timing was not right for him. My hour has not yet come. But Mary disregarded his hesitancy. She turned from him without a word and asked the servants to do whatever he tells you. He then turned water into wine. We see in this archetype of the divine feminine having power over timing. Let's look at an example in a pagan context.
Apuleius.
Thank you. Apuleius prays to the Egyptian mother goddess Isis. O holy blessed lady, constant comfort to your humankind, your compassion nourishes us all. You care about those in trouble as a loving mother for her children. You are there when we call, stretching out your hand to push aside anything that might harm us. You even untangle the web of fate in which we might be caught, even stopping the stars for us if their pattern is in any way harmful. In the gospel story, did Jesus realize when he saw the water that the time had indeed come? Seeing is believing. Seeing is timing. Mary knew his timing before he did. Sometimes the coach knows a player is ready for varsity when the player doubts himself. In our own life, there are times when someone comes along who requests, convinces, forces, or tricks us into a choice we didn't think we were ready to make. It could be that we were indeed ready, but just did not know it. Or it could be that timing is responsive to wise or caring voices. All this suggests how our personal timing relates to the role of others in its unfolding. Our allies are sometimes bell keepers.
Thank you, Meg.
You're welcome.
So there are times when we don't think we're ready. We don't believe the time has indeed come. And someone knows more than we that we are ready and takes over. And in the story, it's the, shall we say, mother archetype, the divine feminine that steps in. When, remember that people at this time were strong believers in astrology, and look, she would even change the layout of the stars in our astrological chart if she noticed that it was going to be harmful to us. Imagine having that much trust in the divine feminine. To say this, it's so surprising and so touching to me. So, some reflections on what we've just heard. Anything strike you in this that you would like to share? Heiko?
It really requires paying attention, because sometimes somebody can tell us something that you're ready. And if I dismiss that person or the situation or the sign, then I don't see it. So it really requires also a good deal of internal trust, I find.
Mm. Yeah, it shows the importance of other people in the topic of timing. Other ideas?
Yes.
Okay, Pat.
This reminds me a lot of the issues between DNA and epigenetics. We might say that Jesus's DNA was just about ready to pop into this mode of action. But epigenetics is the science about the environment that that shapes the action of the DNA, that trumps, so to speak, what the DNA is capable of, so that the environment can pull forth what's needed. And timing can catch up, in a sense, depending upon the need of the moment, the need of the hour.
Mm. Thank you, Pat. That means a lot.
This is Elaine speaking.
Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
I'm also aware that there can be people that will give you wrong advice, and that there is that would not serve you well and could lead you down a very wrong path.
Mm.
And that it's important to be able to discern who is speaking to you and what their motives are, and not just to listen to anyone.
How would you make that distinction, Elaine? Like, what helps you discern who is speaking in your best interests, or who has a motive that might not be quite right?
For me, it would be someone who chooses instead to listen to me and the choice that I'm trying to make, and to help me build that, or build on that, and clearly understand the pros and the cons, rather than leaping in and saying, oh, this is what you must do. Immediately, when someone is so very sure of the right path, then I immediately put up some barriers. I want to know why and explore it more thoroughly.
Mm. Yes. Reminding me of something that happened a long time ago. It was back in, I think it was like 1989. I was working at La Casa de Maria, and I was, you know, offering counseling to people who came there on private retreats. And I've always remembered that a sister came, a nun. She wasn't from Santa Barbara, but she was, you know, there with us here on her own private retreat. And she was talking to me about, you know, her future in the sisterhood and, you know, should she stay or should she go, our topic in our book. And I could tell that she had the answer inside her already. And I put all the accent on just having her say more and more about what she was feeling. Mm-hmm. And she came to her own realization about what she should do next.
Yeah.
And a few months later, she sent me a note and she thanked me, you know, for helping her make the decision. And I thought to myself, I didn't really help her make the decision. I helped her see the decision that was already forming inside her. And that would be a way of discerning whether someone has your best interests at heart. If they're looking into helping you look into yourself.
Exactly.
To know whether a time has come to do something, rather than telling you, this is what I think is right, or this is what I think you should do. Elaine, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say that's exactly the distinction that I was trying to make that you put so eloquently. Thank you, Dave.
And there are times when someone else does, as in this, in our little story here, which is from the Gospel according to John chapter 2. And this is Jesus' first miracle. This is the beginning of his public life. He didn't think he was ready yet. And she saw the readiness before he did.
But it was his choice.
It was his choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody else have a comment?
Dave?
Yeah, David.
I was kind of taken by the, you were talking about the different ways it can happen. And one of them was someone or some outside force trying to control you to step up. And I was realizing, well, a lot of times there's situations that require, that feel like they're kind of forced upon us, but still at that moment, we still make a conscious choice on whether to step up and try to be ready or not. Those are usually the opportunities that go well when we step up and surprise ourselves.
Yes.
But when we actually like follow someone else's lead and try to do what they're telling us to do when we don't feel like it's right. I can't think of one case where that's ever gone well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still have to sort of respect an inner sense of ready, whether or not we're, I think, conscious of it or not.
Yeah.
I was thinking of like an example of trying to help my siblings learn to ride a bike. If they weren't ready, it was going to be disastrous. They were not going to be able to go out there and do it. It's like, even when you could see them, you know, like on the training wheels, they weren't really relying on the training wheels anymore. But if they didn't believe it, they just weren't ready to take them off and try.
Yeah, that's what I meant by seeing is believing. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dan. Kate, hi.
I just been reflecting on the notion of kind of readiness and right and wrong answers or actions or directions. And I really, actually in the years that I've known you, Dave, I learned this really important lesson from myself, which was oftentimes when I made what I might've called the wrong decision, what I got out of it was a critical learning experience that the wrong, you know, the quote unquote wrong decision really delivered into my lap. And I felt a really incredible sense of gratitude, even if the experience was painful, and almost always the experience was painful, but the learning that I got from it changed me. And so it taught me to look at those decisions. Like I may have made a wrong decision because I wasn't ready, because I needed that learning. And that has kind of given me a sense of gratitude for the difficult experiences in my life where having followed the wrong advice because I think it helped me really hone in on my own sense of my path. I just wanted to share that observation.
Mm. Thank you so much for telling us. That means a lot. In other words, the timing was not really about the decision. The timing was about learning something important that would refashion your attitude about something. So sometimes the timing seems to be about whatever the choice is, but really it was about what Kate just brought up, which is it was time for me to learn something.
Yeah. And it was a deepening of my self-awareness by learning through an uncomfortable situation. Someone at work asked me recently, you know, they're all very excited about innovation and the idea of innovation, and asked me where in my life and work I've seen the most tremendous innovation. And I thought about it for a minute and I thought, I've seen the most tremendous innovation come out of catastrophe, mistakes, and like confusion and error and chaos. And it was a really big realization for me in that, like, that's where I've experienced the most dramatic and beautiful change. That's my experience.
Thank you, Kate. Okay, anybody else have a comment?
I have a comment. This is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
This may not really be relevant, but in reading this, I was reminded of, speaking of the divine feminine, the experience of giving birth. And it's like, okay, this timing is right for me. I am ready to do this now. Let's do this thing. And reading the line, Jesus responding, which I'm thinking of the baby saying, the timing is not right for me. My hour has not yet come. So that's an experience of surrendering the power of timing to kind of let go and let God to a higher power than my own agenda.
Yeah.
That makes any sense.
I have thought of that. Like when the doctor tells you, the day, the delivery is going to be on such and such a date, you know, like it's not consulting baby. Okay. Somebody else had a comment.
Dave, do you see, there's a comment in the chat from Maura, basically asking, how do you recommend tuning into our inner divine feminine for wisdom, as that's such a theme here?
Thank you for asking that. And so it's a calling upon this energy that's in all of us. So each individual, each person has all the archetypes in the heroic journey story. We have the mother, the father, we have the hero, we have the villain, we have the wise guide. And an important part of one's prayer life or one's meditative life is to acknowledge that all of those energies are in you and then call upon them. May I open to the divine feminine inside me, and may I listen more and more to what she says. And just doing that as a kind of affirmation in an ongoing way, it really makes a difference.
Dave,
no one has ever asked enough of the divine feminine. I'm thinking of just an example from Catholic tradition. St. Catherine Labouré in Paris had a vision of the Virgin Mary. Mary asked that this image of her be put on a medal called the Miraculous Medal. And it shows Mary standing in the pose of all the great goddesses of the past. She's standing with her hands, with the palms facing us, and she had rings on all her fingers, and St. Catherine, and from some of the fingers, there were rays of light. and from others there were not. So St. Catherine asked Mary, what's the meaning of those rings on your fingers, and some emit light and some do not? And Mary said, the ones that are emitting light, those are the favors and graces that people have asked me for. And the ones that don't have light coming from them are the favors I could give, but nobody ever asked me for them. And I thought to myself when I read that, so it's almost as if she's saying, we just don't ask enough. We don't call upon the inner energies that are in us. We think of them as somewhere outside or up in heaven or in an image. But really, you're never looking at religious images. You're only looking at a mirror of what's inside yourself. And once we get that, we have more access to, in this example, the divine feminine. Okay, anybody else had a comment?
Dave?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think also when you're not quite ready or you feel you're not quite ready, synchronistic activities come into play.
Yes.
And I remember when I wanted to get to California, specifically Santa Barbara, way back a couple of years after college, I hadn't really accrued enough money. I didn't know how to do it. How do you begin to get to California from Pennsylvania? And through some complex synchronistic activities, not only did I get to Santa Barbara, but I also had all my expenses were paid when I got here for several years until I got my footing and got some great jobs and ended up working within the inner realms of the city. So it was exactly where I wanted to be, but I wouldn't have known how to get there, especially been able to afford it. But grace and divine plan, I suppose, all came into play. And I followed it, and I followed it, and here I am today. That was 1976.
So we could really trust that. We could trust that we will also get help from synchronicity, and by that, she's referring to meaningful coincidence.
Yes.
It's the archetype of grace, and grace is a big part of timing. It's something beyond our control. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. And it comes our way without our having to merit it. Hence grace. Now, it's not a reward. It's a favor. We're living in a world of favors that want to favor us. And what we're learning from our hopefully from our meetings and from the book, is that it's possible to access these favorable conditions. It takes an openness, which we're all capable of. So my affirmation is, may I be more and more open to the timing, to the transitions, the changes, the challenges that come my way. Okay, anybody else had a comment? Mm-hmm.
Dave, I've got a curiosity.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's fun chatting in these sessions. So I come at my own perspective from a pretty cosmological point of view, a process relational framework of thinking about reality and the nature of God and God's activity in the world. And through that, I often think about the lure of God or the calling of God in our lives as something that is not deterministic, meaning there's not necessarily a right or a wrong timing, but there is a setting in which each of us find our lives in which real possibilities do meet the actual world that we're a part of. And so I guess what I'm trying to express is, as I experience your offering here about the divine feminine and this even more pagan framing. I understand that there's a poetics to this, you know, that there is a in some sense a metaphor for the activity of God. And I'm just curious for you, if you do think about timing in such a manner that there is a right or wrong time to do something, or if we're always working on some level with at least some degree of wiggle room, you know, in terms of there being, you know, maybe there's a moment of concrescence where something opens up and it's just clear, you know, that there's the right thing to do is to step through this threshold. And other times it's more vague, like you've talked about in weeks past here, you know, like it's hard to tell. Sometimes you kind of got to just step out of the boat onto the water, you know, without a lot of clarity. So for you, I'm just curious, given those sort of margins of error and the lack of clarity and the poetics of all this, in a cosmos that works the way that we all, you know, experience it too, how do you deal with that level of ambiguity in decision-making, you know, or how would you reframe perhaps like this idea of there's a determined correct time, given the potential for this, like this, the ever interpretive task that we have of human beings of having to make decisions in an environment where it's not exactly clear. You know what I mean? Does that question make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
The way I look at it is this, that there are two parts to the timing. So let's say timing chain. So let's take the example of making bread. It's up to you how long you will knead the dough. That's in your hands. And so the decision about the timing is entirely up to you. But when you place the dough into the bowl and put your cloth over it and leave it, then it's going to have its own timing when it comes to the rising of the dough. So I'm going to be respectful of that. I'm not going to interrupt it. I'm unable to force it to happen faster than it can happen on its own. So I would have to say when it rises, that's the right time for the next step, which is for it to go into the oven. And then there will be a third kind of timing, in which that I'm also not in control of, and that's how long it will take for it to bake and be just right for the dinner table. So it's not as if, in my mind, it's not that there's an exact, that there's a way that we can have control over the timing of everything. And that's why I call it the mystery of timing. But there's also a second part to my answer to your question, a kind of timing that we're going to talk about shortly. And when I get to that topic, I will come back to your question.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Somebody else? All right, so Carol Spoluto, do you want to unmute and could you read us this section? Now I'm going to talk about timing more directly.
Timing refers to the right time for something to happen. By the right time, we mean the moment in which everything has come together to make our decision or choice line up with our capacities and circumstances. Timing, like enlightenment or spring, is beyond our control. We can't just make it happen. It has to happen on its own, in its own time. Once I was ready to learn, the teacher appeared. Timing also refers to the time it takes for something to happen, as in birth, the rising of bread, a bird's hatching from a shell.
Thank you, Carol. So here I come back to your question about the right time. It's the moments in which everything has come together so that your decision lines up with your capacity and with the circumstances around you. And that will be beyond our control. So here we have the right time, but we're not totally in control of it. Okay, and now I'm coming to the other part of this. Steve Dennison, would you read this part?
In Greek, two words for time stand out. Chronos means time as in duration, time passing sequentially. Kairos refers to opportune timing. Conditions are now just right for something decisive to occur. The time for us is to step up to a calling, for instance. To this, we respond with alacrity, all our hesitations gone. We know it is Kairos timing when our response does not feel like a choice. Instead, it feels like an alignment to what is ready to happen, or even to our unfolding destiny. We did not dig down into, we slid in and were carried away in by grace.
Thank you. So this is the other idea of the right timing. It's called the Kairos. It's the opportune moment for something to happen. And it may not have anything to do with the ordinary timing as time passing. So let's use a simple example. Let's say the time has come for you to be alone for a while so that you can really look into yourself and kind of go into a retreat mode so that you can discern more clearly what your next step is. And that happens to correspond with the day of your wedding. See how confusing that's going to be? Because your inner life is moving toward time alone, but your external choice is about being with somebody. So now there's going to be confusion inside you because socially you're doing what people do. You're getting married in the society that you live in. But in the inner world, that's not really what is meant to happen. So sometimes we've made choices because of what society, our parents, religion have recommended, and it wasn't really fitting with what was the right time for us. This was not the time for me to be with somebody. This was the time for me to be just on my own. And after being on my own for a while, the choice I will make regarding a partner will probably be much more appropriate. Of course, it's taken us a while to come to these realizations. But we don't want to look back at the past with regret. We want to say to ourselves, I need to appreciate what my timing was and appreciate whether or not I was aligning to it and not hold it against myself. Ideas about this or questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Using your idea of your wedding, how do you know if it's really feeling not meant to be versus a lot of people, probably most people, maybe have cold feet just beforehand thinking, oh, this is scary, this is whatever, but maybe you're still really meant to do that. How do you discern if it's between those two things?
That the cold feet would be thought of, as you just indicated, as normal. Having been in the active priesthood, of course, I perform many weddings, and I sometimes wonder how many of the couples are still together. But I do remember that pretty much all of them had some hesitancy at times. And of course, back then the people married a lot younger, so many of my couples were like in their early 20s. And so they were just, they were able to make these kind of choices with more ease. But even with them, there were questions. And, I would always say, it's your choice, and the cold feet don't have to influence the choice. But if you have very strong objections, then we should not go ahead with it. And usually they could see the difference between a strong objection and just ordinary cold feet.
Yeah, thank you. I've married over 200 couples also, and the very first one, the groom said right in front of the bride, "I don't think I'm going to show up."
Oh.
So that was interesting, but he did, and it all went off okay. But yeah, it's just the idea of you get that inkling, that really your inner voice. Yeah. Thank you.
But I do have a little technique that might help. So let's take a look at this. Jenny, would you read for us?
Oh, time, thou must untangle this, not I. It is too hard a knot for me to untie. Shakespeare, Twelfth Night. The decision to go or stay has to pass the test of time. For instance, we might be waffling about something. Do we want it or not? The test of time is to see if we want it, without doubting, every day, all day, consecutively for 30 days. That can be a way of knowing whether we really want it. Another example might be to work on our marriage. Give it our all, every day, for 3 months, to know whether it can succeed. The number of months is up to us, but the test of time is crucial in our quest for readiness and for wise choices.
Thank you, Jenny. Mm-hmm. So this is my technique. If you're wondering, should I do this or not? Give it the test of time. You have to want to do it without hesitation, all day, every day, for 30 days straight. And if it passes that test, then you certainly do want it. And another technique is, give something your all, put all your energy into having it work. And if it still doesn't work after 3 months, that means it's just not going to work and it's time to move on. So this is what I call the test of time. Questions or ideas about this? Does this sound like a useful technique?
That's Dave. What page are you on?
I didn't write the page for this, but it's all in the chapter that we're reading for today.
Okay.
Which is chapter 5.
How did you come up with the 30 days and the 3 months?
Well, I tried with various clients, and it seemed like less than 30 days regarding, for instance, a client is wondering, is this the right relationship for me? It seems like it's not really working, but yet I don't really want to give it up yet. And we're wondering about, you know, where we go from here. And I would say, well, do you want it enough so that you could say that for a whole month you had no doubt and you really wanted to do it? And I noticed most people could not last the 30 days. So that seemed like a right amount. And then the 3 months is, the 90 days is really important for something so meaningful as, you know, wanting a marriage to work. So I've just been trying it out and it seems like this makes sense. The other thing I've said to some couples is, you know, regarding they're already together, and I say, have you had 30 days of no conflict? Have you had 30 days of happiness? You'd be surprised how few people say yes to that. So the question we're going to go into our rooms with has to do with this whole idea of the test of time and where you are with timing. So our question is, what time has come for me? What am I now ready for that will change my life? What change am I ready for? And if you don't have something specific, you can talk about your what your own timing is like. And we will be coming back in 15 minutes or so.
Sure. Do you want to do 15 or 20 for breakout?
20, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll come back at 11:15, everyone. So you're going to get a little pop-up inviting you to a breakout room. You should have 3 to 4 folks in your room, depending on the numbers and the algorithm. And yeah, we'll call you all back here in about 20 minutes for our final Q&R with Dave. So here you go.